You're listening pretty late.
It's so weird. It's a strange night. The crowds on Michigan Avenue have thinned a little bit. It's almost like everyone is anticipating oppressive heat on its way to Chicago. It was a little warm today, but there's a strange mood, I think, in the city. And those of you listening last night, you know that we were talking about the fact that I can determine whether or not it's going to rain by the pain in my knee. And it turns out I was wrong today. And I'm miserable because that pain was not relieved by the actual occurrence of rain.
Oh, man, you just made me realize that I should have done an intro. My audio wasn't working, but I have an intro. Can I do it again?
Yeah, you can do your intro right now.
Let's do this again. Intro. Okay, here we go. I'm excited. Thank you, Patty, for letting me do this.
Of course.
Tonight, it is hot. And that's the whole thing. And it's going to be hot for the next couple days.
It's a paca hot.
Yeah, it's a paca hot. So we're going to talk to Skilling tomorrow.
It's a paca hot. Yeah. Look, Brandon C. Price.
It's going to continue to be hot.
Yes.
On Patty Basket.
This is really like that.
Yeah. Pretty late with Patty right now. It's hot.
Yes, Brandon.
You guys are under the impression that this is hot.
Not yet. We're anticipating.
How hot?
Okay, Brandon, can I first tell you, as I told everyone last night, I don't have air conditioning?
Well, see, that's crazy.
I haven't turned mine on. And
you didn't?
You're insane.
My house is 68 degrees constantly.
Right. So today, there were times when it was hot because I woke up to hotness. Hotness followed me all day.
Betty's lovely.
Right, Betty's lovely. I woke up to double hotness.
I get that the buildings are old, but why not go window unit in every...
I'm not allowed. I'm not allowed to do that.
You're personally not allowed.
We've done it twice, and both times the unit has been returned.
Okay. The look in your eye means like I get it.
I was defeated. I was so soundly defeated on both occasions.
When I first moved here, we got into our
studio. It's fine.
And we packed everything in, and I was like, man, it's like 90 degrees. And I started looking for the central air control. And I tore up that entire house. I mean, it was 3 hours. I went down to try to talk to the landlord, like, where could it be? Is it some sort of floor thing that I need to ask? And I finally figured out that you people live this way. And it's just crazy talk.
No. I mean, there are buildings that have no central air.
Oh, I get it. I totally understand that. And yeah. I've lived in them, and I put a window unit in every room.
Right. Every other apartment around us has several window units. As I approach my apartment, that makes me sad.
I see all the other ones. Yeah. I have never lived without air conditioning. Never.
Nope.
When I was at the University of Illinois, we lived in an apartment on Green Street, and the air conditioning unit was in the living room. Guess who slept in the living room for the entire summer? Right in front of that air conditioner, on the floor, no zero Fs given. I dragged my mattress out there and just slept in front of the television, and I fell asleep to stand-up comedy every night at 2 a.m. because there was a radio station that would play comics for anywhere from 10 minutes to an hour. You never knew what you were
going to get. It all came full circle.
It was great, yeah. But
camping.
I have to be in air conditioning. Yes, I've gone without air, but when I've gone camping.
But that's like a thing we chose to do for a night or three.
And there's something about being outside, like it's acceptable.
Mm.
But being inside and sweltering. Although I was sitting outside yesterday with a friend and they were getting too hot. And it was not that bad last night.
Are they giving us temperatures of what the next couple of days are supposed to be that you guys are reacting to?
Well, we never did this before, which was predict what the, you know, forecast what the weather was.
Okay.
Then say, but it's going to feel like that. That only started in the last decade or so. I would say maybe since we had a big heat wave in 1995, over 500 people died. We were using our paddy wagons as temporary morgues because we ran out of room at the coroner's office. It was a big thing, and that's why you see a lot of warnings, wellness checks, check on your friends, on your neighbors, on the elderly. So now we do the same way we do wind chills. We do a heat index. So
it feels like 115, but it's 103.
It's supposed to be. Mm-hmm. It's supposed to feel like 110 degrees on Friday.
Ugh.
And here it's a little bit different. I don't know what it's like from where you're from. You know, in the South.
I mean, they say like you know you're in Texas. It gets up to like 108, but it'll feel like 115. But feels like because the humidity down there is pretty constant.
And
that's always a thing.
And our humidity is bad here as well. I'm not doing I'm all braids for the rest of the week. Too bad, Rick Pearson. Just too darn bad. Here's Zach. Zach, what do you want to tell us?
I'm a cable guy and I travel for work, and I went to an apartment in North Chicago, and in their bedroom they had their air conditioner unit, which was a window one, in the middle of their bedroom. And it was the hottest room in the whole house. I was dripping sweat.
I
told them about it. I said, you need to put that in a window, otherwise it's just going to make it really hot. Not going to cool down at all. And they said, no, it's broken. I said, no, it's not working right.
Man.
I thought that was
That's miserable. Zach, do you have central air or window air conditioner? What do you have?
Oh, I'm a cable guy.
I know, but do you, for your, where you live, you rest at night.
Oh, central air.
I can't. I don't know that I'll ever be able to live without central. I mean, I obviously I could.
Oh, yeah, of course not.
But it would be sad for me. All right. Well, thank you, Zach. Do you have a lot of calls over the next couple days?
No, I'm actually off Thursday, Friday, Saturday, so I'm good.
Well played. Yeah.
I'm going to stay inside.
You got lucky. All right. Thanks, Zach. Have a good
night. Thanks for having me. Bye.
Of course. I had an apartment on Wilson Avenue near Lincoln and Wilson in Lincoln Square. And during that heat wave in 1995, the window air conditioner, because it was so hot, there was only so much the air conditioner could even cool. Mm-hmm. And because heat rises, the only part that was cooled in the apartment was below the level of the air conditioner. It was only like if you stood up.
So you were like
hot.
A cat, like bathing in the sunlight, but it was you in the cold.
Yeah, I would just lay under, like if I stood up, oh, it's so hot, and I would get back down. Like the bottom half of my body would be fine. So yes, I was in the prone position quite a bit.
I've always had a fish tank too, which is a requirement to keep it cool. That'll be my excuse for being a real wuss when it comes to like not having AC. But it's true, you have to have AC in some way to keep it.
What can we do, Craig, to convince Betty? Well,
there's nothing you can do. Nothing.
If the next few days,
I promise you can do. And it's such a slow defeating of the use of the air conditioner. It's like we don't need it on right now. Mm. I think I'm getting a little sick. I have allergies. It's incredible. It really is.
What if you got one of those like server room ones that just mm-hmm. has to have the tube that goes outside?
Oh yeah, no,
and
I've
talked
about
the walls.
Yep, no, I've talked about those. No. Everything.
The portable ones, you mean?
She believes she is allergic to. Actually, I find that she's allergic to stuff she doesn't want. Whatever she is, whatever she dislikes, our cat. There's just stuff that eventually she gets allergic to it, and then you can't keep it if there's allergies. It's fine. I totally believe her. She's lovely.
Okay.
It's definitely allergies. Cool.
Have you the 2-liter bottles filled with water in the freezer and I'm going to sleep with those?
I just put my face in the freezer from time to time, and then I take like 65 showers a day.
That's what I was going to post.
Yeah, shower is helpful.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Face in the freezer is very good.
Mm-hmm. Face in the freezer, cold shower.
Free pops.
So you got a lot of options.
Yeah, no, I'm really clean, so that's nice.
And Esmeralda, you don't turn your air on?
I don't have it on now. I'll probably turn it on once it gets super hot. But like today was fine. It wasn't that hot.
Was it?
Seriously, no.
Was it fine?
I slept fine all day.
Was it?
I don't know. Yeah.
Wait, what time imagine. Were you sleeping at?
In the morning to the afternoon.
I think I think you're benefiting from like neighbor's air conditioning or something.
Yeah, I think you probably are.
I mean, I have a lot of trees.
Oh, see, you're shaded. So
we're shaded, and I turn the blinds down. And
312-981 981-7200. Was it hot today? we need a consensus here. 312-981-7200. Was it hot today?
We're disagreeing on the show already.
Yeah.
Was it hot? This is more controversial than the RNC convention.
No,
this,
and way better than what's your favorite pizza.
And they're both hot.
It's so hot. Now I want pizza, and it's hot. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio, joined by the CEO and mastermind behind Vamp, a music, comedy, and drinking show every Friday and Saturday night at 10:30. You can go to vampchicago.com. Vampchicago?
That's it. You've perfected this.
I'll forget later. Don't worry. It took me all night to get Melania's name right last night.
Well, you've only done ours for like a year and a half. Hanging out for like a year and a half.
It's been a lot of fun.
Been awesome. And Craig's been there?
Craig's been there, and Esmeralda was there.
It's our birthday, Patty, and I'm really excited that you're definitely going to be there on Saturday.
And you're not. And I've made plans with all my friends.
Just come the next couple weekends. Honestly, I think we might be pretty much sold out. Everyone should go see if we are, but for the birthday, it's Friday and Saturday. We're celebrating our second birthday. And it's just going to be absolutely nonsense. But then the first year of
we'll be there.
First show of year three.
We will be there to celebrate with you.
Did we say a second ago that I've been to VAMP? I haven't been to that.
No, he meant here.
Oh, here. Oh, here. Well, okay, good. Because I want to go to VAMP for this anniversary, and then you're not going.
Well, I'll tell you this. Every show is awesome.
It is. Esmeralda has seen it several times as well.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
It's one of my favorite things to go do. I don't go see live comedy that often, even though I am. It's my industry.
It's hard. After so many years, it's hard.
Well, it's also, one, I work. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm working nights, too. If I'm not doing this, I'm performing on the weekends, hopefully.
Sure.
But also, yeah, I mean, it's not that I'm a cynic when it comes to other comics, but it's also tough for comics to sit in the crowd and not not critical.
No, but absolutely. You know the art, so you're not enjoying the experience. You're judging the art, good or bad.
Which is why your show is so amazing for me, because I can't do musical comedy. I've never seen it done as well as you guys do it.
Oh, thank you.
And so that's, for me, it's been a wonderful experience. Every show is incredibly different. I've seen your show 6 times, and I've never seen the same thing twice.
Well, I'm...
Except for your vest.
Yes, I own one vest. I ripped those pants, though.
You did.
Now it's just black pants. It's
that vest would go with jeans, but yeah. You probably want to, like, dressing up.
No, you
got
to be to the nines.
Yeah,
absolutely.
The gray vest would go. It's a gray blue sort of a color, isn't it? Gray.
I trust
slate.
You. I don't do well with All colors. Right, I do well with comedy.
You've let me hold it before. I think I've worn it a few times.
Oh, that's true. That did happen.
I always appreciate it. I feel like I'm your body man. Like I'm your dresser.
I'll
when
take
you
it.
Hand it to me.
I'll
it's
take
fine.
It.
Craig, you gotta go
no, I just realized we have yet another out of context for Nick.
Right.
You've let me hold it before.
You let me
I'm
hold
sending,
it.
I'm sending it right
I
to
know,
him.
We
Mark.
Just...
Yeah, and these are all real ones, Mark too. It. He's got to use these.
I don't know.
I think my vest might work, too.
That's true.
What I heard.
Because we're not shooting for it.
Right.
It just happened.
These are happening by accident.
It happened organically.
Truth.
That's true. Have you been watching any of the convention, the Republican National Convention?
I have. Honestly, I get it more from my family directly, like asking comments to me. Like there's several very Republican group texts that I'm unfortunately involved with.
And what is their sense? Because there's a lot of uproar over Ted Cruz's speech tonight.
Yeah.
And apparently he did not. Doesn't appearing sort of imply that you are?
I don't think so. I think you have to say it. It's like when Sanders came out and said it and there was all that like backlash, like, oh, you're quitting. Well, no, he's not quitting and taking back his message. He's just fighting the fight against the Republicans. Mm-hmm. And that's the only way to do it. I'm interested to see that Ted Cruz did not do that.
Right.
I wonder if he's in the minority that kind of stood up at the first day of the convention and was trying to demand the revote for the allowing the delegates to make a new decision.
Well, those were his supporters primarily that were asking for that. Even the state of Illinois, I believe there were 9 out of, I think it was 50. There were 54 delegates for Trump, 9 for Cruz, and 6 for Kasich.
Oh, good for Kasich.
I know. Right? poor Rubio. Marco Rubio got like 1 from Hawaii. I think.
Well, that guy looked, he was like, who's my age? I don't think he was.
He's
he looked
older.
My age.
He does. I think he, and I heard, is he presenting? I'm not sure if he gave a speech or, I think he was Skyping in his speech was what the plan was.
That's literally phoning it in of the new generation.
I can't be there, but I would love to say something. And then the governor of Illinois did not go to the convention either.
Man, that party is in trouble.
It's very strange. Well, there are no Bushes. George Bush Sr., George Bush Jr. and Jr., Jeb and George, neither one of them went. And I think it's been decades since that's happened because, of course, the Reagan, right, during the Reagan run, so beginning back in the late 70s.
Well, he brought that party together and shifted everything, Democrat and Republican, all at once. It hasn't been, from a conservative viewpoint, it has not been great since Reagan. It's that nostalgic thing. It's like the American dream. We all still think about it like it was great, but it's not a thing anymore. The world is different. Reagan is no longer, his policies are no longer applicable, whether you're a conservative or not.
I think that he did do a good job of unifying the party.
Most certainly.
Of inspiring people, you know, and whether it was in his rhetoric or his charisma. And people were drawn to that. My dad was a big Reagan Republican.
Well, he was one of the last ones to not just completely tie all governmental and fiscal and social economic matters to social issues.
Right.
Like things that besides anointing a judge or approving a judge, you can't change as a president anyway. That party got so reliant on the conservative Christian base.
Social issues.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
That now they're tying things that like
which
foreign
started...
policy has no thing to do with pro-choice or pro-life. And yet when you look at normal voters from down south, that's how it looks.
Well,
that's how it's tied in.
It did. I mean, that momentum started before Reagan. And I think he didn't do anything to disrupt that or to threaten.
No,
any
he
of
took
the, Christian...
the votes.
I mean, you know, the ERA was during, I believe it was during Reagan's administration when the Equal Rights Amendment failed, and that was to get equal rights for women.
Yeah.
And there was a big back, that was when the whole, like, if you were a feminist, it was a negative thing. And I think that there was a more subtle attack on different groups. But, I mean, you know, when he was the governor of California and there were student protesters, he ordered the military to fasten bayonets for the protesters.
Wow. Fixed bayonets.
Mean,
that's something you, like a Civil War reenactment.
I mean, so there are things that, you know, whether or not that's not going to come up in a convention or part of a candidate's platform, but I think it sort of I've always thought that reflected on who he was and the way he wanted to approach any kind of assault. You know, whether it was a protest or the differences in the party or yeah. from outside.
It just seems like every conservative candidate has gone more and more and more that way. And it's just a shame because there are people have decent points on both sides. When
right.
you get wrapped up into opinion and religion, which shockingly enough should probably not be involved in. I don't know, a couple of dudes in the beginning said something like that. But it gets real messy.
Every speaker I've seen has talked about that their Christianity compels them to be here, and you know, that they pray every day. And mm-hmm. I think for me, my religion is so important that I consider it to be private, and I would never impose it on anybody and say that it's what compels me to do something. I consider my behaviors to speak for themselves, to reflect my religion.
Most certainly. And like separation of church and state is just a joke. It's just a funny phrase these days. It's just people have combined the two, and when you combine the two, you get things like the Roman Catholic Empire. You know what I mean? That didn't go well for most other people.
Right.
Right. And it's swinging that way, and it's as a policy in that party, and the GOP is just, they have forgotten how to talk about really important stuff. I mean, changing the, like, a time for safety was the first, like, they're just fear-mongering instead of talking about anything important. And it's embarrassing. It's like as a person who comes from that world, and but they still blindly just say yes,
right?
Because anybodybuthillary.com is their viewpoint.
And I think we'll see a lot of the same next week. Anybody but Trump next week. I think there'll be people who vote lock and step.
There's a ton of Democrats that are sitting in that world too. And
yeah.
what a great position for our country to be in, where everyone
right.
just hates the other candidate a little bit more than they hate theirs.
Really, I think that says a lot. Do we need to use it all the way to the news? I think that really is where we are. And I wonder how many people take the convention seriously, because I don't think most people even are paying attention or want to listen to it. But if let's say Donald Trump does win, I think that we should be watching now. What is this presidency going to look like? What will this administration look like? And if you go from the beginning, from Monday, and I know everyone said that Melania's speech was a diversion, that we were locked into the wrong thing. Only the way they handled that situation, that the fallout, saying, you know, first saying, oh, it wasn't plagiarism, and Hillary's, you know, it's a Hillary campaign blowing this out of proportion, but it's also, you know, Michelle Obama stole it from My Little Pony, which really happened. They said that.
There's no friends like
God,
friends.
I love My Little Pony.
Yes. But I don't, the way they handle that. And then today, the speechwriter saying, well, I had conversations with Melania and she read passages of Michelle Obama's speech because she admired it so much. I wrote them down, included them in the draft, and did not realize they ended up in the final draft. So here's the thing. Then if that is the way it went down, Melania, is that her name? Did I say it right?
You're saying it right.
Pilfered. That is downright just black and white. That is pilfering, plain and simple.
Right.
It's
plagiarizing.
It just is.
Right.
I don't know any other way. For her to say, these are the passages I like, and then to see them again, it's entitlement and it's BS. But the way they handled it, so then they're not going to fire the speechwriter because she assumed responsibility. So this is an administration where if somebody does something wrong and they drop a bomb somewhere, well, you know what,
yeah,
they were doing
really,
the best they could.
They told us to do it.
That was the way that...
Every week, though, there's a thing with him. I honestly think it's almost all purposeful because it's so manipulative that it keeps you on your toes in a way that you can't even tell why you hate him, because issues are changing constantly.
In all fairness, guys, though, it was all about a video, was it not?
Which one?
Remember Benghazi? It was all about a video that spawned this spontaneous uprising in Benghazi, Libya. If we're talking about administrations lying about things, I mean, there have been a few whoppers come out of this one.
Oh, certainly. And I think the bigger issue is, again, now we're talking for 3 days about this lady and maybe she stole these words and maybe she meant to. And now we're not talking about issues again. And meanwhile, the convention is just rolling along. I think as the American people on both sides, we are being distracted, whether it's NASCAR or whether it's whatever Trump did the next day. And I love NASCAR.
And when it comes to
that's what it is.
And when it comes to that it was a video, there were other attacks that were being carried out because of that video. Were there not?
There were not.
There were.
No.
There were
not.
Yes, there were.
Okay.
See, this is exactly the kind of conversation, because we take the information that we've read and we've all taken, right? We are not part of the investigation. From what I have read, that there were attacks in other places because of the video.
But specifically relating to Benghazi and the four subsequent deaths,
right?
They said that it related directly to that video.
They did. Yes, they did.
Which is not true.
It was not. And then they started changing the story and also started scrambling to sort of control the story as well.
This actually proves our point. The cover-up is always worse right?
Right.
So it's incumbent upon these politicians across the board to get out ahead of these types of stories.
And to be honest.
Exactly. And just,
be honest.
Just get on with it.
Right.
Because
right.
then you don't have a story.
Well, and my problem
to take,
with...
To
that was
assume
like
responsibility.
And
by the way, Melissa called real quick. I know we can't get callers on air because we're late.
Am I too loud?
She,
yet,
no,
much?
No. She said that maybe the reason they did it is so that Melania is now next to Michelle Obama in a lot of photos.
Right.
People like Michelle Obama, so this could be a great way to... try to blend them together.
And what a strange
it's
way to blend
a
it.
Idea. Yeah.
But
say,
and let me just say this: this is something I've wondered about since the beginning about the video. Why did we need to know that about why the attacks were happening before we even were in there and making sure we had recovered our fallen men? That was something that I had always wondered. And I remember when when Hillary Clinton was testifying and getting over the 11 hours of going over it and going over it. I just always wondered why do we need to know the specifics of that? And we didn't know the specifics of whether or not wheels were in the right direction for the military going in for a strike. We didn't know that stuff, but somehow we knew what compelled this attack. So
I think Rob hit it on the head. I think it's some PR person somewhere. Yeah. It's like, well, we got to do something and we got to get ahead of this. And I think when you actually have the truth and you're clear, that works. Look, when David Letterman came out and told everybody that he had that affair with that lady, he didn't let the story, like the news run with it. He just
right.
told everyone to their face. And then everybody the next day tuned into Letterman.
Right.
Like if you're honest, that works. I think a lot of this on both sides is PR and twisting things to try to get out ahead of other things and avoid talking about the truth. And right. I think sometimes they get away with it and sometimes it backfires.
Right. There we go. Oh, put me in cold. I'm ready to play today. Put me in cold. I'm ready to play today. Look at me. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. That music means it's time for Catch Up on Sports with Mark Carmen. Carm is on the line, but I do want to take a call. I'm sorry, Carm. Can you? Hey, Carm, do you mind holding on a second? I'll put you under pressure so that you have to say it. It's okay.
Patty?
Yes.
I cannot hold on. I have to go right now. No, you have to take as many calls as you want.
Are you watching?
Waiting patiently.
Are you watching the convention coverage of the RNC?
I watched some. I wouldn't say I'm attached to it to your level. No.
I'm not attached to it. Here, let's see what Mike thinks. Hey, Mike, what do you think of the convention so far?
Hey, how you doing, Patty?
Doing well, thank you.
I think this current convention, actually, I kind of hate it, and I'm actually a political junkie that actually watches the conventions every 4 years. I voted for Bush and Obama at least once. These
Ooh.
Kinds of things I look forward to because for me, it does actually, it kind of shows not just the platform of what the party actually stands for, what the candidate's going to at least put forward. We can at least judge them from then and there. And even the speakers that are on the lineup, they at least show you what, the members of the party that you may not actually know about, but hey, these are the up-and-comers of that particular party, and I can at least
indeed.
Focus on.
Right.
This
right.
one, I can't do that. I mean, so you're telling me like Scott Baio or
sorry.
It's like a really bad minor league farm system.
Yeah.
Right. Like, who's up? I mean, who's up next? Who's the one with the big idea that I might want to like pay attention to up down the road? Which is actually the reason, the big highlight from tonight was actually the Ted Cruz speech. Because at least if you do not know what conservatism is
I have trouble with
in
that
the
too.
RNC. Mm-hmm. In the RNC, if you watch that speech by Ted Cruz, at least you know what the part that at least what he wants the party to stand for.
Right.
And for me, at least I that's what I come to expect from a convention speech. Until he got booed off the stage.
Yeah, that was interesting to me that he got booed off the stage. What are you looking forward to next week's convention?
Next week's convention, I am actually. I think it's going to be completely different than this one. Because this one, it was like the sky is falling and the earth is crumbling. Well, I think next week, a large part of it is going to be, hey, you know what? Obama's really not destroying the earth on purpose.
What?
What? Well, Mike, will you check in with us next week and tell us if you think, because in your screen type, the description of your call, it says that the RNC is a dumpster fire. Let us know what adjectives you would use or what description you would use for the DNC next week. Sound good?
Rigged.
I'll call next Wednesday.
I appreciate it. Thank you. Yeah. And we don't even know who the VP is going to be yet for Hillary's ticket. Carm, so many things. First of all, Carm, let's just say that it's very exciting that the Cubs have at least taken 2 of 3 from the Mets. I'm very happy about that.
Look at you, Patty, following the Republican National Convention and then all over a Cubs 2 out of 3 with the New York Mets. That's impressive. Yes, it was a good. It's been a good start to the second half for the Chicago Cubs, no doubt. And today was a good win. Last night was tough, but you know, long baseball season, bounce right back, get a W, win the series, all good.
Well, especially because we went into the All-Star break with what we had lost 8 out of 9. It was a little dismal.
It was a very rough stretch, but you know, the way I remember the end of the All-Star break is, you know, the Cubs winning the final game in Pittsburgh. So it kind of felt like everything
right.
was sort of, you know, there was at least some form of ooh, thank you. Okay, that was a
right.
decent win.
Right.
They had lost 5 in a row before that, 2 to the Reds and 1 to Atlanta at home and then 2 in Pittsburgh. But then they got that last win. And, you know, listen, they were 7 games up at the break. And who would ever complain in the history of Cubland, right? But you're 7 games up at the All-Star break, 18 games over 500.
That sounds so, you know, good. Those are good numbers.
They're sitting at 7 games in front of St. Louis right now, 20 over. So the Cardinals are playing decent out of the break as well, hanging around there. But the Cubs have played a lot less games at home. So there's that. Cubs have only played 46 at home, Patty, while St. Louis has played 51. Now, the Cardinals actually have played terrible at home. But, and you know, the Cubs made a trade today. Are you excited about the trade?
What's the trade? I'm not familiar.
So they traded Chris Bryant and Anthony Rizzo. I mean, those guys are pretty cool.
Stop it. It's not
got
funny.
A lot of minor league it's prospects, though. Very excited.
I don't even know what muscle just twitched, but I was like, that's not yeah. a funny joke.
No, they traded a guy at AAA who's going to be a good player, but he's blocked by Rizzo. His name is Dan Vogelbach. And they got a left-handed reliever who also could be a starter by the name of Mike Montgomery, who is 27 years old. And Theo seems to think he's about to break into his own. He's already a good pitcher. So they needed help in that bullpen. They needed help on the left side. And Theo, who should have 7 statues built around Wrigley Field.
Well, I mean, I think he seems to have decent instincts on these kinds of things. I mean, Arrieta was you know, an average pitcher when he got him, wasn't he?
Well, he was, I'd say, below average at that point.
I didn't want to be harsh.
Yeah. He identified a guy with a ton of talent, and they made, you know, a reasonable trade and at the time, and it turned out to be, you know, a home run.
He looked good last outing, too. He had a few walks, but he looked better than beforehand.
Yeah, no doubt. He threw 74% of his pitches for strikes, which is a very strong number. Jake Arrieta like, so that was good.
I have a strange gender thing to say partly when I posted something of myself on Facebook, it was removed for being distasteful, and then people started sending me pictures of Arrieta being completely naked. And now when I think of him, I only think of him in that wind up with his leg all the way up and kind of seeing a lot more of him than I thought I ever would. Does that happen to guys when you see someone who's naked? All of a sudden, that's the only way you can see them for a while? Like, that's the first image that pops in your mind?
You can go first, please.
I could think of 37 people. No,
right?
No, I don't know. I guess that depends. When I see Arrieta, I see the Mets striking out right now, and that, as a Braves fan, really pleasures me. But I have not looked at him nude yet. So.
Oh, you haven't seen his nude? Hold on a second. Let me get his
No, yeah, please. Let's look it up right now.
Esmeralda, have you seen the nude photos of Arrieta?
I have.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
He's very well trained.
One would hope. I'm sorry. I just flashed that. You know what? I need to go see him. I need to go see him pitch, and I think I will see him
in a different art medium.
Exactly. Just, I think, you know, on the mound.
Don't you think it's cool, Patty, where they're like, hey, Jake, do you want to come on out to the desert? You know, we'll pick you up in Mesa at the Cubs training facility. We're going to bring you out to the desert. We're going to build a pitching mound. And we're going to have you get totally nude, and we'll give you a baseball mitt.
Yep.
And
that's
it. Terry cloth robe, and we're going to interview you. and it'll be cool. And he's like, I'm all in. Let's do it.
Yeah. No, it's great. The entire issue was fascinating to me, and it was a great conversation. He is a tremendous pitcher, and I think that he talks a lot about what it takes to get to that point physically and, you know, intellectually to get into the mindset of being who he has become. I think he's remarkable as an athlete.
Yeah, yeah. Did you see the new addition coming to Wrigley Field, Patty?
What's the new addition? The hot dog pizza?
No, this is now the American Airlines 1914 Club, 7,200 square foot area being built as the VIP experience. They're going to be digging underneath home plate. So they're creating for the fans, the 600 season ticket holders that have tickets right between the dugouts behind home plate. They're building a special amenity type of deal, and it's basically like the White Sox have their scouts. The Cubs are doing the same thing. And
well, Pink Hat guy's got to be excited about that.
Pink Hat guy is all in.
He's all in, no doubt.
He's already envisioning the carved meat he's going to be eating.
That's right. Man, that guy can talk, by the way.
Rooms, nice. Dedicated entrance, upscale food, beverage offerings, padded seating.
Finally, man. Those people just, I'm so glad that that's happening for them.
Why is it called the 1914 Club? I mean, shouldn't it be the 1908 Club?
Good question. I'm not, it's...
All right, we'll get...
I think 1914 was the year that... I don't know. There's something going on. It's going to open in 2018. I'll try to find out here.
All right. Take a moment, and we'll come back to you. You go out, you go do your extra credit work. We're hanging out with Mark Carman. Follow him on Twitter, @TheCarm, and on Facebook, Mark Carman. Every Saturday and Sunday, he hosts The Beat from 3 to 7 on Saturdays and 3 to 6 on Sundays.
You know, they might call it 1914 because that's when Wrigley Field opened.
I was wondering if that was going to be it.
Oh, yeah. That is it. That's it.
Uh-huh.
Well, asked and answered then. Let's see
that
what
might be it.
Let's see what else Carm can tell us when we come back on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio, joined by Brandon C. Price, who is the CEO and mastermind behind Vamp, the music, comedy, and drinking show, celebrating their 2-year anniversary this weekend at MCL in Chicago. Go to vampchicago.com for more information. That's Friday and Saturdays at 10:30. On the line with us is Mark Carman, who is the host of The Beat on Saturdays and Sundays. And, co-hosts vary. I would say sometimes it's Adam Hogue, sometimes it's Jared Payton. And that's all I know, really. Right, Carm?
It's a little bit there. That's true. This Saturday, Sam Paniana.
Oh, yeah, Sam's in there.
Adam's chair.
How's his brother doing? I know that, well, we probably should check in with him. I don't know if it's fair to ask you to update us on Sam Panianovich's brother's pitching career.
Well, I wouldn't have the answer for you, but I do know that Sam had some Facebook posts. I think he got promoted up a level.
Wow. So, how cool is that? Yeah. Be on the lookout. Mm-hmm.
I don't have any brothers that have that type of talent, although brother Bruce Carman did play number one singles for the University of Chicago back in the day, Patty, so don't sleep on that.
No, I'm impressed, as we all should be, with that, and thank you so much for enlightening us about it.
Thank you. Of course, my brother did not endorse me at the Tennis Republican National Convention.
The nerve of him. What other? How are the Sox doing? Are they? Because they were having a tough time going into the All-Star game. All-Star
very
break.
Very rough week for the White Sox. Lost today on a walk-off, 6-5 in 11 innings. The big one though, earlier in the week, they won yesterday, but the day before they were up 3-0 in the ninth and gave up 4. Wow. And if you haven't heard the audio of Hawk Harrelson not saying anything for 50 seconds. After, they were up 3-1, two outs, and Adam Lind had a 3-run homer. And Hawk's call was, that's deep.
Yikes.
Yeah, that's a ball game. And then all you heard was just the Seattle crowd cheering for 50 seconds. We'll see you next time.
Oh, man. That's the way to stay impartial.
Yikers. Wow.
I mean, I, lo- I enjoy biased announcers. I think, you know, if you're working for the White Sox or the Cubs, AK back in the day, I mean, I don't need a national broadcast on the home broadcast.
Right.
For sure. I mean, that some of the greatest calls that you always remember growing up are definitely the home team calls. The Sid Bream call in 92, that is one of my family's chants.
Really?
Oh, yeah. That was one of the greatest things that's ever happened to anyone.
I can't believe you just referenced Sid Bream. That's awesome.
That's the man, my everything. And he is safe. Braves win. Just so everyone knows.
We get to reminisce. It's not a great season.
We used to win 30 years ago.
I was going to say, it's been tough for you. It's been tough. Craig, are you still sweating out the season with the Yankees?
I am actually supremely disappointed they're winning baseball games right now.
There
that
goes
is
your
something
draft
that
picks.
It's inconceivable. They're not going to win everything. They're not good enough. They're not going to make the right changes to be
but
good
as
enough.
Can you really
sell
cut
your
them
players,
off?
Yankees? Sell the players.
But as a fan, do you really want to watch
get
that?
Get younger.
September?
Get people that are good at stuff. Stop winning games now. Lose everyone. Beat them, please. Yeah, I'm
well,
still
here,
paying
this
attention.
This is an interesting question for you, Patty. One of those guys that Craig wants the Yankees to trade is Aroldis Chapman, who
for Chris Bryant.
Right. Well,
you can't
and
have
a player to be named.
Yeah, you can't have.
Right. Well, Aroldis Chapman was in a domestic violence abuse situation where he allegedly, I think I need to say, was choking his girlfriend and fired 8 shots into the air. Now, the Yankees took him on after that. And now they may trade Aroldis Chapman because they're perhaps out of it. Now, if you're the Cubs, and, I mean, this guy is a lockdown stud closer. Like, you get him the ball in the ninth inning, you have a lead, the game is over. So, if you're the Cubs, are you going to take a guy like that on your team, and let's just say, you know, that locks in that you're going to win the World Series. Are you willing to have a guy on the mound who, by the way, is pitching the ninth inning, so when they win it, great chance that he'll be throwing the baseball. I mean, do you want that guy, or would you rather roll the dice?
I'd rather roll the dice, but that's me. I'm not a sort of rabid fan. I'm impressed with the entire collection of incredible players that we have with the Cubs. So that if given that choice with the team we have, I would not. I would be like, well,
that is
roll the
not
dice.
Your only choice of closer-esque people.
Yeah,
that
he's
are
the only
New
one that
York
can
Yankees.
Throw 103.
No, but he. I don't think he's the best one. I think Andrew Miller's a much better pick, right, Carm?
The Yankees, though, they've had A-Rod, they've had DeShera, they've had their share of terrible people.
Right. We currently have to. Yeah, this is all true, and we still have A-Rod.
Right.
Aroldis is throwing pitches at 105 miles per hour.
He's a free
That's
agent at the
nonsense.
End of the year. Andrew Miller, I think you want him, and you want to give us good players for him, and he's a good human. So
yeah. Right.
These
well,
are all ideas.
True, he is. He scores higher on the human scale, but he's going to be more expensive prospect-wise. Aroldis being a free agent at the end of the year, you don't have to give up as much. Giving up less is always preferable. I'm conflicted on it.
What if he goes the Josh Hamilton route and comes out and says, I'm like a public apology that doesn't sound like a PR move?
No,
and...
that didn't happen. He said the opposite, actually.
Oh, what did he say?
If you remember Mark correctly, he said that a lot of stuff was overblown. It wasn't what you've been hearing, and he's just here to play baseball.
Okay.
Right.
Were there charges pressed against him?
Yes.
And
I don't know if they were pressed, though. Did they actually press charges against him, or was it just the fact that charges were considered that he got suspended? Because I don't think they actually pressed charges.
It never went far. But he's the first player in baseball who was suspended for the incident without any charges actually being filed.
Oh, interesting. Oh,
so baseball probably had a pretty good idea it happened.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, there you go. Yeah. Carm, anything else before we go? We have to run for the news.
Let's just congratulate the Chicago Bulls on winning the Summer League title, Patty. It was an incredible accomplishment on Monday night. We had a massive celebration out in Morton Grove after our softball game, watching the Bulls win the Summer League. Congrats to Fred Hoiberg, Bobby Portis, and the MVP of the finals, Jerrion Grant. It's a huge win.
Well, and also to the Water Boys. Carm, thank you so much for hanging out with us, and we look forward to having you back in studio sometime.
Yes, next week. And I'll be continuing the show right now on the sidewalk, on the corner of Racine. And Addison. So.
All right, cool. Go find Carm out on Addison Racing. We're up to this on 720 WGN.
The world's first bionic superhumans. They're stronger than us. faster, smarter. The next generation of the human race is
living in my basement.
Craig, you are way too excited to have our next guy. I'm excited because I'm a fan of so much of his work. We have Hal Sparks on the line. You know him from Talk Soup, from Queer as Folk, and apparently Lab Rats, which I can. Hal, will you be offended if I'm not familiar with Lab Rats?
Not at all. Do you have an 11-year-old?
I have Craig. Yeah. I have my producer.
I'm a 30-year-old, and I happen to catch Disney shows from time to time.
All right. Well, we're the one to catch. I think we're the one that actually has adult-friendly jokes.
Oh, there
I agree a lot with that, yeah. And I think that's definitely your character as well that gives me a lot of that sweet, sweet hilarity that I'm looking for.
Yes, the hidden Warner Brothers-y kind of jokes from the 1950s that you were like, how in the world were they able to say that on television? We somehow managed to pull it off with great regularity. There are literally some jokes that made it into the pilot that I'm not even sure I can repeat on the radio, because if I explain them, I might get in trouble.
Really?
So that's... Oh, yeah, yeah. It's a smart show. All of our writers really come from that 70s show.
Well, yeah, that's so, the thing is a lot of the shows that write, a lot of the writers for teen, like, you know, the young adult shows, because my son watched Good Luck Charlie, and that seemed to have a lot of fun stuff on it that you're like, oh, this isn't as hokey as I thought it was going to be. I never sit down and watch a lot of them because I'm like, oh. Mm-hmm. Once you have Thomas the Tank Engine running for hours, it's hard to trust anything that comes on your television next for your kids.
I can't believe George Carlin did that.
Yeah, exactly.
That's right. Yeah, he was Mr. Conductor.
And Ringo, by the way.
That's right. you know, the reality is that I think kids' programming is getting smarter and smarter because both the parents are watching it and they are taking their kids to see movies that over the years have gone from kind of saccharine, sweet, you know, Disney-esque, you know, super protective Beauty and the Beast kind of stuff. To, you know, Toy Story and those kind of things, which are sharper, quite frankly, rude, you know, ruder, if that is a word, more rude than you would expect in children's programming. And I think everybody's racing to catch up and match that, even though we keep forgetting kids have brand new brains. You don't have to do that. They're still amazed by a balloon. So, when you chase a grown-up audience, I think that's what the reality of, you know, all superhero movies have just come to roost on the fact that Deadpool made more than all of them put together, practically, which really just proves that superhero movies are for emotionally stunted adult males.
I don't know. I enjoyed Deadpool a whole lot, although I do...
And emotionally stunted adult females. I will certainly group you into that.
I'll embrace that.
I
loved it. I totally loved it. I was super impressed. But I also thought that it the reason why it was so good is it got its demographic right.
It definitely did. Well, it's weird for me because I've been a stand-up comic in Chicago for a long time, and I think we must have missed each other just barely. But T.J. Miller used to open for me, and I it's weird for me to say that out loud. Like T.J. Miller and Hannibal Buress were my opening acts. I'm like, I'm gonna stay here in Chicago and just see how things work out.
Yeah, well, it's like it's funny with bringing up T.J. Miller in Deadpool because he and Ryan Reynolds almost had the same vocal cords. There's so many times in that movie where you can't even tell who's talking. what an odd casting choice. You would have at least, during the screen testing, went, well, they got good chemistry, but which one of you just said that?
I have to agree with that. Yes, Brennan?
He rolled into Sketchfest, Comedy Sketch Festival in January, and it was day of. It was so exciting that their group was coming. And, you know, everybody has a tech rehearsal the week before, and they have a tech sheet, and you go through. He rolls in, like, 30 minutes before his show, and it's like notebook paper. It's like, I don't know, keep the lights on. We're just going to do some stuff. And they were the funniest show.
Totally. There's a level of freedom, you know, that I think is what's really appreciated with him and with that crowd. So, absolutely.
And I did not realize that you had you moved around a little bit when you were young, but landed here for high school and went to New Trier.
Yeah, absolutely. They straightened me out. I think that I always thank New Trier to a great degree, not just because they had a great theater department and it really took the magic out of entertainment and just put the blue collar kind of work ethic into it. Mm-hmm. You know, there's nothing, you know, especially in comedy, you don't really get discovered. Any more than somebody discovers someone trying to jimmy their way into your car, you know, like,
right.
You know, you have to keep at it and it's got a regular kind of a ladder to it. If you keep, you know, going and you don't give up, So, you know, you start open micing, working for free, which is effectively interning. And then you either host or you act as a 5-minute opener, or you do guest sets, and then you feature, and then you build up to the point where you have your first hour, and then you refine that hour and you realize that was a terrible hour, and now you have a great hour. And then after you love that hour for an hour, you know, for a year, you hate that hour too. That, you know, and then you realize, oh, I'm a stand-up now, 6 years, 7 years, 10 years later.
Exactly.
Whatever.
Right. Well,
there's no magic, though. It's not like you're sitting on a, you know, drinking a phosphate at a, you know, drugstore counter and someone goes, kid, you got moxie. Like, it doesn't.
No, it does not happen.
You don't wake up one day and understand that you just instantly did it, because that is my last 30 years was aiming towards that.
I mean, no, so sorry. It's not the way it works out.
Well, you know, I just, in Kentucky, where I grew up, you know, until I was 14, I loved stand-up and I loved the idea of it, but I had no idea that was a job that you could actually do. I thought comedy albums were like birdsong, like somebody just had a microphone on a guy who was being funny at a party or something. Like, I couldn't wrap my mind around someone getting a paycheck for that. And then when I moved to Chicago, it really did have this kind of normalization to it, like, oh, it's like working at any company, kind of, but it might take a while, but you'll work the way up. Easier than law school to some degree. Okay, let's just do that. And it really was that simple. And I think the reason why it happened so well for me at the rate that it did, and I mean, the 90s were a lonely decade. I called them the Sisyphus years, but they, by comparison, career-wise, it happened relatively quickly. And I think that was because I still got 20 years left on my phase one plan, because
right.
I think it should take way longer. And if I'm Anthony Hopkins, when anybody gives a crap who I am, you know, at that age, then so be it. So I'm really patient about it, you know.
Well, that was one of the things. That was one of the things. I don't know if you know Carla Felicia, but she told me, we were working at Grand Forks, and she was one of the comics that told me, "Look, this isn't a sprint; it's a marathon, and you have to be patient with it." And that's always that kind of advice has always helped me out. You mentioned that you listened to albums when you were a kid, even before you moved to Chicago. Who were you listening to?
Well, my dad worked on musical instruments as a hobby and sort of a sideline job, and he did like fret work for Bela Fleck from Bela Fleck and the Flecktones,
and people blues,
like that kind of, yeah. And so we were around that whole crowd all the time. And a friend of his had two mandolins he needed fixed, and my dad fixed both of them, but the guy couldn't afford to pay him. So he gave him a crate of records in exchange. And it was like one full milk crate was just comedy records.
Wow.
And so in that was, Shelley Berman, like the Primate, which is sketch comedy, a collection of like Groucho Marx solo shows, Godfrey Cambridge, I had all the Godfrey Cambridge records, Lenny Bruce, Richard Pryor. And to me, like the pivot that really changed me from like reading and remembering or, you know, memorizing stuff and then just repeating it to my friends was listening to probably Toledo Window Box by Carlin and Hank's Place and Black Ben the Blacksmith by Richard Pryor. Because on those, he's like, you know, he's turning these stories out where he's playing all the characters and he's delivering a performance that most people don't even know of Richard Pryor's stand up except for Live on the Sunset Strip, which he was basically TMZing himself.
Right.
But I really got attached to that play like storytelling, one man show almost behavior that he did, where he was really constructing these worlds, and that fascinated me, and that made me start doing my own stuff to my friends and around my circle.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, he would do these characters and get into these beautiful bits that
Mudbone. I used to do Mudbone for my mom. as a 10-year-old, as a 9-year-old, you know, and that character was so rich and so full and so just charming that it made me go, okay, and you could tell most of the time it would just come out as improv. He definitely had stories and he definitely had stuff, but there were lines that magically came from the character as he was doing them. That's the root of improv. That's why I went to Second City when I got to Chicago, too. Because that's what I wanted to adapt to and learn was, no matter what I'm doing up there, as long as I'm invested, it's always going to be funnier. And that's probably why TJ and his group, what you were talking about earlier, why they were the funniest, is because they just got into their groove and stayed there. And I've always been fascinated and excited by that kind of performance.
Well, you can't mess up when there's no script. I feel so much safer behind nothing, like just like than coming out with a script.
You can you might not be able to mess up, but you can whiff like crazy.
Yes.
You can just swing and a miss, swing and a miss, swing and a miss. It is definitely still a tightrope walk, except the tightrope goes in whatever direction you choose. You can change the direction, which is the one difference from doing a scripted piece.
Well, in particular with stand-up, I think, too.
That's valid. Yeah, you have to be on your toes because it's so interactive. You're staring in the face of the people who are reacting to you, either messing up or pulling something off that you thought was a mess up, and then, holy crap, that worked. Of course I meant to do that.
That's right. And there's also a lack of total, like, modern audiences, curiously enough, have a total lack of investment in actual skill. A lot of times they just want to see you mess up, and the messing up is actually the act now. Yeah. So many people just play nervous or play, that didn't work, as a punchline. It's basically the hipster, post, I guess, maybe it's millennial hipster comedy stylings is not trying.
Well, it's so referential, too.
No matter what you're faced with.
You don't have to be clever anymore. Like you were talking about Richard Pryor. I mean, that stuff is, if you watch it today, it's generally still very funny. There's
it's
so much the audience wants.
It's cleverness.
Oh, absolutely. It's timeless.
Yeah.
And then everybody now would just, oh, man, he referenced the Trump. Man, this is good because
There was actually an article, I think it was in the Chicago Tribune, saying that the best way to get a great show out of a comic is to heckle them, because then you see what they're really made out of. And to me...
Please don't come to my show.
Yeah, that's...
Yeah, well, the reality is, and this is somebody who arguably started as a heckler at Zanies, honestly, because heckling used to be an art form, and it was very specific. It wasn't just some random drunk yelling some random thing. It was actually local comics who wanted to make their bones in a market, watching this comic come through town that had been through 3 years in a row and was doing the same act. And it was so pat and regular that you knew his punchlines, and you'd start yelling them before he did.
Wow.
And that was the most brutal form of heckling you could do, was get to the punchline before the guy does. And that was the essence of heckling. And then if you kind of test them, bring them out, and then if they attacked you, you could throw some lines up. And then afterwards, you could go up to the club owner and go, can I get 5 minutes? I'm actually funny. And he might actually do it. That really, before Twitter and YouTube and all that stuff, that was kind of your way of, elbowing your way into a scene. Now it's a great way to get yourself blackballed by the agency of the comic that you were performing with.
No kidding.
So if they find out it was you, that's that. So nobody really does that anymore. The only people who heckle are just kind of the random
drugs.
Who really don't have anything, so it's like they're chucking paper wads at you while you have a bazooka laying on the ground next to you, and you kind of go, it's almost not worth it.
Oh, I agree. By the way, this is Hal Sparks. And when you're at Zany's on Sunday, because you guys should all go see him, he's got a special event this Sunday, the 24th. The showtime is at 7:30. You can go to zanies.com, click on the calendar. You'll see his lovely photo right there. Such a great headshot, by the way. Will you photograph so well? This is Hal Sparks. Can you hold on with us? And I want to talk to you about the Republican National Convention when we come back.
Oh, indeed.
Yes, please. More after this on 720 WGN. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Joining us on the line is Hal Sparks, who is performing this Sunday at Zany's on Wells in Old Town. The show is at 7:30. And before we talk about anything else, I just got a text from our host that comes on right after me. He wanted me to tell you how amazing, how much he loves you, that you rule. There was a word before that I can't say on the air. That's Nick DiGilio wanted to say hi.
It was very flirty.
Well, that's awesome. Thank you, Nick, and right back at you, including the language. And I that's an issue that I have currently, having been on the shows that I've been on and being on the show that I'm currently on, that there are language limitations about people's excitement. Although it is fascinating in this modern era to have a gay couple who can now adopt very excited, and their kids who are adopted being very excited, and neither one of them can make the other one understand why. It's really
Well, I have to agree with the, when it comes to language, because I do too. When people come see my stand-up comedy shows, I have to let them know, you know, on the air, if you come see me, I, you know, yeah. I'm an adult and I can do any kind of show. I'll do, you know, a church mm-hmm. show, and then I've got my third show, Zanies, that I've got to make sure that I keep people's attention. So it's going to run the gamut.
You know, mine's like a TED Talk with Tourette's these days. Like, it's, you know, you kind of almost have to bring a calculator and one that will, you know, you can type in 58008 as well. So there,
nice throwback.
Did you think about it for a second?
How much? Don't worry about it. How much of the convention are you watching this week?
Most of it. I mean, I have to, like, certain parts of it, I have to kind of zone out on, because it's there are parts of it. It's like a commercial where they just throw up the logo. Most of us will watch, an ad for the funny part. And then the minute it goes to Geico, you're like, oh, yeah, of course it's a Geico ad or whatever. Like, you kind of blow that part of it off. And most of the stuff with the vitriol about Hillary is sort of the brand of this particular thing. But I love how, like, they have managed – keep in mind, how he runs this campaign and this convention is indicative of how he'll run the country.
Right.
And there has literally been – a monkey wrench in the machine every single night, and it's a couple of cases twice a night. So I don't hold out a lot of hope for his ability to actually do the job. So as much as I know people love the idea of, you know, movements and revolutions and people stirring up the establishment.
Right.
I have to remind them that, you know, technically the Constitution is an establishing document, so establishment isn't necessarily a bad word. And revolution has really become like the 6-minute abs of modern democracy. Like, you don't have to eat and exercise and think and vote and work hard for more than one election in a row. You just need to get a sort of a voter lap band. Let me be, I'll be your political lap band. Just elect me and then go back to sleep. And I think there's always a problem, when that's the prevailing theory. And I think both Bernie and Trump sort of capitalized on that thought form this round.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And the rhetoric, too, when it comes to the Trump campaign has been sort of startling from the very beginning when he announced and said that, you know, Mexico sends their worst people, including rapists and drug dealers. And people say they love that because he says what's on his mind and he's not worried about being PC. And yet when you have people protesting and saying that their lives are in danger and Black Lives Matter, they're like, oh, don't say that. You're just stirring up trouble.
That's right. Yeah. Free speech goes in one direction. And, you know, that's sort of the Fox methodology, which is why he can call them from bed in his slippers. And that's news. Because as much as they accuse the liberals or the left being all tied up with Hollywood and the cult of personality, the minute, like, wait, Scott Baio will be here? Like, bang, you know, you're allowed.
Right.
They the salivation machine starts on high heat. And it's kind of bizarre to me. But Trump is exemplary of where the party, unfortunately, has been going. I mean, I'm not one of these people who necessarily hates the idea of a two-party system. I think, ultimately, our two-party system would probably be better served if it was the Democrats versus the Greens, because the compromise there would actually be more about governance and less about, you know, saber rattling and nonsense. But in this particular, this is exactly where the Republican Party has been headed for the last four cycles. The irony is, I don't know if you have heard, you know, all the kind of speeches, but almost everything they're saying about Trump, if they'd have said it about Romney, I'd have believed them, kind of. But when they're saying it about Trump, you know, they don't even think it's true. That's the weirdest thing. Donald is such a happy and go lucky guy who does what he says and says what he does and knows more than you even know and is so kind. Like, we all know he had all the Black people removed when he came to visit his business, his construction site. Like, don't pretend that you don't know that. It was one of the selling points.
It's loyalty to a fault,
really
though.
Rich guy.
Right.
Don't you have to kind of tip your cap to somebody who's willing to literally probably die for their cause? You know what I mean? Like, yeah, you're absolutely wrong, but that lady or Trump or whoever at the convention is like all the way Trump and ignoring the fact that he's absolutely the worst in most people's opinion. Like, there's got to be a little respect for that. Like, you're sticking to your guns when you still have them.
Yeah, I don't think they're sticking to their guns. I think they're gripping their guns white knuckled because they think other guns are pointed at them that aren't. That's what concerns me. They think they're under fire. This is the kind of the world where, like, Bill O'Reilly, when he's critiqued about what he's saying, thinks his free speech rights are being violated. It's, you know, and it's no. This is how free speech works. Both sides are allowed to criticize the response and the answers of each side. The reality is most of those people who are vehemently anti-Hillary are really, for the most part, buying a line that they've been sold since 1994, hardcore, you know, and it's not, she's going to, you know, add to the debt or whatever. It's that she and her husband, you know, murdered Vince Foster and that, you know, they personally wanted Benghazi to go south, like that kind of crazy, like middle of the night trucker radio kind of stuff that they are absolutely sold on. Because what's the alternative? The alternative is look at your guy and really ask yourself, no matter what you believe, if this is your principled belief, I'm totally cool with that, but is that the guy to shepherd it? That's the hard part. So that's why I think they're so like, Hillary must go to jail.
Oh, I agree. I mean, the fact that they have posters with Monica Lewinsky on it at the convention, I mean, how is that something that you're also dredging up?
I remember that happened as well.
Yes.
It's very strange.
That occurred. That was another example of much ado about nothing, where Republicans spent a lot of taxpayer monies a la Benghazi and ended up empty-handed. So try to find something else to make their fishing trip worthwhile, you know. So they're literally going on a fishing trip and coming back with the bottom of the boat. Look what we caught. Like, it's the silliest.
I have a feeling Brandon wants to talk more, but I have to go to the news. Hal, I don't want to keep you longer, but if you want to come back, hold on, we can continue our conversation. I don't know if you've...
I'm a fan, sure. I'm awake anyways. It's just the nature of being on the road.
Craig just got excited. He's going to play some more Lab Rats music, I think, even when we're not on the air. I think we're putting in an episode. We are hanging out with Hal Sparks. He's appearing at Zanies this Sunday night. You can go to zanies.com for ticket information. The show is at 7:30. It's the Zanies on Wells in Old Town. And I love that they're calling you a Chicago native. Do you consider yourself to be a Chicago native?
Absolutely.
All right.
Yeah. Favorite city in North America, hands down.
Chicago's very own Hal Sparks is going to be at Zanies. Right. And he's agreed to hang out with us a little bit longer, I hope. Well, I don't want to take up all of his time, but this is too much fun.
It is fun. It is. You'll enjoy it. I'll make it worth it. I promise. I'll stick around.
Oh, you already have. Thank you.
I am a good time.
Enjoy. Call me for a good time. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio, and really glad that our guest, Hal Sparks, has agreed to stay on the line with us. He's appearing this Sunday at Zanies on Wells in Old Town. You can go to zanies.com for ticket information. The show is at 7:30, and it's a special event because he's a great guest, and I have been a fan of his for many years, all the way back to Talk Soup. Craig is a fan, Lab Rats, and so many other things. Queer as Folk is the music that you just heard. And we were talking about the Republican National Convention before the news. And my regular guest, Brandon C. Price, who joins me in the studio, is often the counterbalance to conversations that we have when it comes to social and political issues. And he was he had to push his mic away at one point.
This is so overblown.
You're not overblown. You are often the counterbalance. When we talk about gun control.
No, that's absolutely true. My anger at Hal has been overplayed, I feel like.
No, you're not angry at him, but you wanted to say things.
No, for sure. I mean, I think you're absolutely right about there's so much of the conservative party that is just so like brainwashed, anti-Hillary, anti-that. And they don't take anything, truth or otherwise, into consideration. But I think something you hit on earlier was that the thing that Bernie and Trump both capitalized on is like a real thing, even for smart people. That like we're like the establishment is so disgusting that you really sit there at night or in the shower going, I mean, I know I wouldn't vote for Trump, but like, would I? I mean,
no.
Like, do you want your racism blatant or systemic? Like, it's coming at you either way.
Here's my issue with that. From both a liberal and conservative standpoint, all the markers But for obvious ones, say like what's going on with Black Lives Matter and the necessity of dealing with the, you know, the number of black men shot by comparison to white perpetrators shot in the same kind of circumstances, all that stuff. As a society, over time, we're moving in better directions according to the normal gatherings of conservative and liberal on both sides. We're becoming a much more socially liberal country. Libertarianism is rising mainly because of that. And even on a financial level, the stock market is at 18,000. There's been wage stagnation, but that's actually part of, like, entrenched corporate structure. That's not because the government isn't passing the right bills. That's because there's no impetus to raise wages across the board. And that's not something that I think conservatives would argue would be handled by a fiscal policy from the government. As a matter of fact, they want as much hands-off as possible. And nothing is really throttling it. And, you know, there's no bottleneck caused by legislation about wages. The reality is that violent crime's been on a, you know, is at a 20-year low, and the stock market's at 18,000. The reality is a lot of people who don't know why they're upset, and they're just freaking out. And their assumption is the world is on fire. It must be that it can't be me. It's got to be the outside world. And that's true of, I think, social justice warriors, and I think it's true of the tricorn hat people at the RNC this weekend.
Well, now I'm going to take this hat off. No, I think so. But that, like, you know, absolutely. Republicans, hardcore conservatives, they have the money already. They have no impetus to change the wages, the way things are dealt with. But, I mean, you look at I always bring it back to campaign finance reform. And when I see somebody like Hillary, I mean, you know, why does CNN put her on all the time? Oh, that's right, because they're her biggest campaign contributors. That is the problem on both sides. And I think it's unfair to just say, well, the Republicans are really that issue. Everybody's doing that.
As part of the Democratic platform and as part of her policy papers, she wants to repeal Citizens United. She said it's one of the first acts when she gets into office. I don't know that Trump has said anything even close to similar. I don't even know that he knows the name Citizens United. I think he makes the thing that I'm self-funding as part of his storyline, which makes him kind of the billionaire class version of Bernie in his mind. But the reality is he isn't doing that. He loaned his campaign the money, and the campaign's going to pay it back even when he loses.
I completely agree. I just don't think that – I think Hillary's just going to say pretty much anything to get in because she's such a politician. Believe me, she will have my vote. I would never do that to you or the country. I completely agree. Right. At the end of the day, that is the right way to go. I guess I'm just so disenfranchised and so upset with the situation, like we said earlier, Patty, where it's not you're voting for who you think is best for the country. You're voting for who you hate slightly less. And that is
that's
a real problem
for everybody.
The step. Well, That's where my point is. And that's that. I think that's an establishment issue. And I think you can come in and you can repeal Citizens United all you want. You're still getting billions and billions of dollars. And it's not just her. Absolutely not. It's the entire Congress. It is the fact that these people take money to be elected, to keep their jobs and take a bunch of money. Why would anyone ever change it, Republicans or Democrats?
Well, a lot of them float out. Evan Bayh's coming back into Indiana to run basically to short shrift around Evan Bayh, Mike Pence. Because they knew the Democrats were going in. That was their Machiavellian move to protect themselves. They've got basically a chess move for everybody that Trump could have picked. Mm-hmm. And they moved Evan Bayh in there to absolutely do that. He was one of the worst examples of the revolving door on the Democratic side. I'm not a fan. And I do think that repealing Citizens United will have a major impact on things. But I also think that, you know, it's not like Trump is for public financing, whereas that is now part of the Democratic platform. There's a difference between actually doing that. It's not just Hillary saying it to get elected, it's the Democratic platform.
If that issue wasn't like Bernie, like they say that he raised a lot of those issues, he made those issues be a platform. Do you think that Hillary, like from a standpoint, like this is who I am as a human and therefore what I believe? Do you think she would have gone that route? Again, not trying to vilify her, but if it hadn't been pushed,
Citizens United was the production company that made the anti-Hillary, you know, the Hillary's America kind of documentary that vilified her as the Vince Foster murdering sociopath who helped her husband, you know, rape half a dozen women. That's what that movie was about. And they wanted to show it in theaters. And Citizens United was, you can't do that. There's a difference between political ads and entertainment, and you can't spread the money evenly around. And the Supreme Court established that you could. And that, to there has to be an amendment to protect that. So, yeah, I think she has a dog in that fight. I think right now, I don't think any Democrat, including Obama, was saying, I'd love to overturn this, but I'm not going to pants myself in a general election in front of the Republicans who don't care about that.
Valid.
They're just going to raise money bulletproof. So at a certain point, I get that it's a great idea, but I think it's almost like, okay, your move on a political level, because would you do that? You're up against, you believe in everything you believe in. You have your core beliefs and you actually want to get bills through. You believe in things like SCHIP and universal health care and all these kind of things. And then you go, but I'm not going to take any money, you know, above this certain marker because it's a matter of principle, while the other guy steamrolls you with $4 billion. It would make no sense whatsoever.
But
what you do is you get into office, that is part of your policy, get the amendment in, and then everybody's on the same playing field. But until then, you have to fight like it's meaningful. Otherwise, you're just handing the reins over to the other party.
But
right?
Don't you owe that person who gave you the billions of dollars? Now you're in, and now if you push this legislation, they're going to be super pissed and not give you any money for reelection and, in fact, attack you and attack against you. So where do you draw that line?
It's a little less quid pro quo than that. I mean, if you look at Hillary's, the speeches, which get a lot of noise about her, you know, the Goldman Sachs, she got $200,000 from Goldman Sachs. She got $250,000 from UCLA for the same speech, essentially. And so if you believe that whoever's putting the money in your pockets is automatically controlling you, she's actually under the thumb of the UC Regents of California more so than she is any bank, because they paid her more money. She earned more money from college speeches than she did from bank speeches. That's just the reality. So you either believe that everybody's on the take or they aren't. In this case, Donald Trump is effectively just running to raise the value of his own real estate, because every piece of policy he changes affects where he's going to build his next hotel. And right now he's getting CIA briefings that are going to tell him exactly where we're putting bases and pulling them out and doing all kinds of stuff around the world, which is basically he's just working with his, you know, his construction team to go, that'd be a good place. That'll be a nice, safe place for, you know.
Is he already getting intel from the CIA as part of this campaign?
Yeah, absolutely.
And this is where, and obviously this has come up a lot with everyone saying, you know, I saw Governor Walker say today, I wouldn't give her my password. You heard the FBI director say that she's irresponsible and it was wildly, you know, careless of her.
The biggest joke about the email controversy is David Petraeus was busted giving secrets to his mistress via Gmail.
She seemed really
Colin
trustworthy.
Colin Powell was using Yahoo as his private email server, and they sent classified information back and forth. She sets up a server in her house for her private email, basically to not have the ability for a giant corporation to be able to fish it. And she's the one who's called out as the more dangerous one. If you're thinking, if it was between you and I, and we were saying, what's the most secure way for me to run a personal email, not my State Department stuff, but my own personal email, what would be the best methodology? Use Gmail or set up a server in-house by a private security team that I've vetted?
Why is that so hard to get across? I don't know why it's so hard to get across to people.
I don't know, because it's the silliest thing I've ever heard. And like I said, David Petraeus, who, by the way, the Republicans would have loved to have run and think he was hung out to dry, actually said, as head of the CIA, I thought Gmail was secure. That is the most ridiculous.
I didn't know he said that.
My grandmother wouldn't say that. Like, who sends nude pics over Gmail? Like, you just know that every tech there is printing them out and putting them on the wall of nudes. But David Petraeus, as head of the CIA, thinks that Gmail is secure. Meanwhile, Hillary Clinton goes, I'm not running my private mail through any corporate server. We're going to set up a server in my home.
There are so many things that people get angry about when it comes to Hillary Clinton. And what they've been doing at the convention this week is also manipulating people with stories of grief when it comes to Benghazi.
Oh, yeah, right.
Fear and sadness.
A lot of fear. And I've had this conversation over and over again. And people talk about how, well, you know, when Benghazi was under attack, she came out and said it was because of the videos. And then it became a whole PR mess. What are your thoughts on that? That she originally had said it was because of this.
That was the CIA assessment at first. They got new information, and it wasn't. And then the CIA ultimately went back to it after they gathered all the people and ended up catching the other nine people that they were trying to round up. There was a mix of human beings who had planned and were waiting for a moment of opportunity. And then they also attracted in their attack people who were ginned up by the video. Both were true.
And that's what I've said. I've said that there were attacks in other places because of the videos, but people are like, no, there weren't. And I that was my understanding.
Of them in the area. Right.
Certainly.
And everybody knew it at the time. And as a matter of fact, there was a big story about, you know, well, that's why they hate us for our freedom. We can put out a movie that upsets people and we don't go kill people over it. That was a big story, as it should be, because it is one of the most valuable things about our society. We are awesome in that regard when we get it right, is that you can be who you are and say what you want to say without somebody killing you for it with by a state sanction or religious sanction. You know, I as an American appreciate that greatly.
You know, yeah, I'll second that.
Kind of important to our existence, you know, and in this particular case, these folks don't think that way. They think that you should die if you look at them sideways, and it, you know, on a religious or philosophical or political way. And that's what led up to a lot of this. And again, we have blowback from the Middle East that goes back decades. That's a Gordian knot of geopolitical and philosophical and religious problems, period. However, there are some baseline things you can understand. And one of them is that certain groups in society don't handle criticism well. And when you get them up against the wall, they act violently.
Well, that's
white supremacists do it. Islamic jihadists do it. The Dallas sniper. These are not people who are thinking through, you know, to a conclusion of what their actions mean in the long term. They are just reactionary and violent and foolish.
Well, and it is
not indicative.
I've been talking to people about cognitive dissonance when it comes to your opinion is not your identity, but that's how we're all reacting.
That's very true.
When someone challenges your belief system, and people are losing their minds. I could do this for the rest of the show. And Brandon, did you want to say one more thing?
I want everyone to know that I'm not going to vote for Trump. And my whole thing is it just sucks that it's not like this is our candidate. She's going to change some things. It's just the lesser of two evils. And that's why I think a lot of people, smart and dumb, are
evil. There's a huge drop off. You know what I mean? Between a serial murderer and a guy who keys your car, there is a.
Oh, I agree.
Lesser of
completely.
Two evils in that agreement. But it's a huge shift. And there is something about, like, everything that they say that's Machiavellian about her, that's controlling or that she's manipulative or whatever. To some degree, that shows skill as leader. If she's managed to get through all these minefields and still get there, there's something impressive about that, at least as impressive as the out of the deal, you know, which is Ghost Rider, by the way.
Yes.
Sociopath.
Yeah, so he should not be trusted with the keys of the White House.
I hire all the best people except the people who talk about me.
Right. Yeah, he's suing that guy. Of course.
Anyways, awesome.
Hal, I'm gonna meet you on for real on in person on Sunday. I look forward to it. Everybody, come see the show at Zany's on Wells, 7:30 showtime. They're usually at 8:30, so this is a special showtime, special event with Hal Sparks. He has his own radio show. You know him from Talk Soup, Queer as Folk, Lab Rats. Oh, now we're getting phone calls. They all waited to listen, and now they're calling. But we have to run. We've put Brandon Weatherby.
Just put words in my mouth the rest of the show.
I think you do a lovely job on your own. Really great to talk to you, and I look forward to meeting you on Sunday. And
me too.
You follow him on Twitter as well at Hal Sparks. And have a great night. Yay!
Thanks.
It was Hal Sparks. More after this on 720 WGN. He's been very patient. We scheduled him for 12:30. Brandon, how are you doing?
I'm here. I'm alive. I'm in a nursing home.
Every night we talk to you, you say you're alive as though that might be in question. I deeply apologize to you, and we haven't yet sent you money to go out and have cocktails on us, and that seems like something we should do in particular.
Yeah, you should.
Yes, yeah, I think that needs to happen. What have you enjoyed today so far?
I was on the floor during Ted Cruz's coronation of being the next GOP presidential nominee, and at the exact same 23 minutes later, the opposite of that. He went from the most loved man to the most hated man very quickly.
I heard he was booed. What was the change? Was the expectation that he would put his support behind, that he would endorse Donald Trump?
Yeah, because that's what you do at a convention.
isn't just his mere appearance, is it implied that he supports Donald Trump?
Yeah, that's what I thought too, and I think that's what the majority of the people thought in the Quicken Loans arena. Things changed. Little Marco had his little video vignette, and that played, and everyone was like, very happy that Little Marco decided to endorse Big Boy Trump, who's got very big hands. And then Ted Cruz came out to the biggest applause of thus far of all 3 days. Biggest applause yet, more so than Donald Trump on Monday night, but it might be because no one expected Donald Trump to come out. But there are a lot of Cruz people there in that arena.
Right.
Cruz comes out. He's doing great. He also owned the room. He owned the room more so than any other speaker thus far.
Do you think more so than Pence?
Yes, for sure. People wanted to like him. People wanted him to endorse. There were so many Cruz supporters there just waiting to hear their guy get on board. And it didn't happen. And once it became clear it didn't happen, people started booing, and Ted Cruz started acting like people were not booing. And now in social media and in this news cycle, there's conflicting reports of whether Ted Cruz submitted the complete speech to the Trump campaign. Ooh. Some reports saying that he submitted 9 minutes and he went for 23. Some are saying that he went word for word in the Trump campaign news and they were setting him up. There's still a lot of reports of people on the floor, those guys in those hats, telling people to boo. I didn't witness any of that, and I was on board. That being said, it wouldn't be surprising if that happened, because the night prior, I witnessed them encouraging people to cheer.
Right.
Once again, no one could really force you to boo. People could encourage you to boo. That's
right.
Is there any chance, you know, you go to like a sporting event and sometimes somebody has a weird name, like you say Lou, but it sounds like you're booing. Is there any chance everyone was just saying Cruz?
No.
Cruz?
Yeah, no.
Maybe.
Nope, I'm going to go with they wanted to physically murder a man. He had to be escorted out of a box afterwards because a Trump supporter was very upset with him. I ran into many reporters after the fact that said, I won't vote for Cruz anymore. That was it. And
wow.
Yeah, I don't know why he showed up, honestly.
Was it just merely the absence of an endorsement, or was there language that specifically said, you know, that I'm not going to endorse him, or that he was opposed to Donald Trump as a candidate?
Yes, Ted Cruz is a real-life troll, and Hillary Clinton is now an internet troll because he said, vote your conscience, and then Hillary Clinton retweeted Ted Cruz saying, vote your conscience. So
he said that in the speech, vote your conscience?
I think that's awesome, though. I think that's awesome. Why not stand up for what he actually believes? Even though he's absolutely wrong in most respects, from my opinion, one of the things I would agree with him on is that I wouldn't vote for Trump either. And he looked the party in the face, as he's often known to do, and like literally just went, no, absolutely not. I'm not playing the games. This is how I feel. You people should do the same thing.
True. That's not true. He didn't literally say no. He backdoor pretended he was going to say yes and then said, nah, no. There's a big difference between literally saying no. John Kasich said no. John Kasich decided not to show up in his own state, in his city, and speak at multiple events around the state. He was at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame last night giving a speech. He said no. He's coming out golden. It would not be surprising this is a real early prediction, if Kasich was the nominee in 2020, just by the behavior of him during this convention.
Interesting. I
think a lot of people over.
You don't think they'll vote the incumbent Trump then?
Yeah, why not? I don't care.
Sure.
I'm bipartisan. I don't care what you people do.
Have at it. We are hanging out with Brandon Weatherby, our correspondent at the Republican National Convention. Are you going to the DNC next week?
Absolutely.
This is exciting. See, I hope that it is as mock-worthy as this has been. Because, I like a train wreck. I like chaos.
Yeah, go
don't we
America.
All? Yay! It's all coming apart at the seams. Brandon Weatherby, how should people follow you on Twitter and such?
@YMTE. I ran into professional wrestler Dolph Ziggler tonight. I ran into Robert Smigel and Triumph the Insult Comic Star.
Nice.
Yeah, it was a real important night of frivolity and entertainment.
Can you hang out with us for a little bit longer?
Sure, why not?
Thank you. I know we've already manipulated your time. We've made you hold on, and I so appreciate it. And I'm very, very sorry, and it won't happen again.
Things happen.
Oh, man. You're are listening pretty late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. I am joined by Brandon C. Price, who is the CEO and mastermind behind Vamp, a musical comedy and drinking show at MCL Chicago. Go to vampchicago.com. They are celebrating their second anniversary this weekend. Tim Slagle, also joining me in the studio, who is hosting a show called Camp Pain every, well, the next one's Monday. Is
fourth Monday of every month. Yeah, but next Monday, the 25th. This coming Monday. Yeah.
And we also have on the line with us, we have a correspondent from the RNC. We have Brandon Weatherby, who is filling us in all that. You saw Insult the Insult Dog? Triumph the Insult? Triumph. I can't say words anymore. I'm trying to get to everything quickly.
The Insult Comic Dog.
That's the one. And how did that meeting go with you guys?
It's pretty indicative of the entire RNC. This has been a really, really calm and really well-run convention. And the mood is pretty positive. Even if the party isn't unified, everyone here wants to have a safe time more than anything else. And maybe they don't want to have a confrontational time. For example, very, very, very few arrests. And Robert Smigel was also at the 2004 Republican National Convention in New York City. And that was very tense, and he was escorted out very quickly. And we're on night three, and Triumph is still doing his thing in the RNC. So I think that kind of says something about the mood of both America and the way Cleveland has been running this convention.
Or it could just be that that the Republicans are ready for Triumph.
No, that's not it. It's definitely what I just said.
Well, no. I just mean, you know, after nominating Trump, an insult comic dog seems perfectly natural.
It does, kind of.
This is a good time to plug Robert Smigel's special, The Triumph. It's been nominated for an Emmy. It's on Hulu. It's really, really, really well done. And if anything, it'll make you like certain politicians more than others. For example, Mike Huckabee comes off really well. Wow. In the Triumph election campaign special. So that's a highly recommended piece from me, and I am not sponsored to that.
Oh, there you go. Wow. That's impressive. Now, you mentioned that there haven't been that many arrests. Today, they said there were more protests than there had been in the last few days, including attempts to burn the flag and a couple confrontations. Some people tussled. Did you see any of that?
Yes, that is absolutely correct. And I saw the end part of the flag burning stuff. But if you look at the flag burning people that were doing it, there were a total of 5 arrests. And they, when you go to a political convention and you burn a flag, you're going to get arrested. That's why you go do it, because you're making a statement. So good for them, and good for the city of Cleveland for handling it real well. Yes, they were arrested. That's fine. It's perfectly normal to be arrested when you're burning a flag in front of literally 100 cops. It felt like one protester to every 10 cops.
Tim,
if not more, then I would say probably one protester to every 100 members of the media. I mean, every day around 4 p.m., my friend, he's covering this for Fusion. He's a photographer and a videographer. We seem to have consensus of around 4 p.m. for some reason or another. That's when it gets a little bit tense.
Mm-hmm.
And then nothing happens pretty much. The Westboro Baptist Church has a bigger presence here than any social justice group.
Interesting. Well, now, what?
So it's not.
It's not.
I'm
go
sorry,
ahead.
Go ahead.
No, you go. It's not what?
It's not what you would think was going to happen based on coverage coming in. I myself, I have not seen many guns. I mean, maybe that's because Governor Kasich said, "Hey, please don't bring guns," rather than just ban them.
Right.
And I think that was a really smart move. So if you're a Kasich fan, I think you're really enjoying this convention.
Well, also, if you have your gun and you're a responsible gun owner, you know you're not supposed to be drinking when you're packing. So
yeah.
What's a convention without drinking? Yeah. Of course they're going to leave their guns at home.
That's solid gun education. There's where the problem is. Solid gun education.
Guns or liquor. Guns or liquor. Well, I think liquor's winning.
Has that been your experience? Is liquor winning amongst the partygoers at the convention?
Cleveland is a wonderfully cheap city, so yeah.
We still have to figure out a way to get money to you. Craig and I were talking about last night. We're like, I don't know how to do that, like money transfer thing. How about if you just, we have to figure out, we give him a cap. I think we at least $25 in drinks for Brandon Weatherby. I will stand behind that.
Okay, all right.
Esmeralda, I'll give it to Esmeralda. When are you coming back to Chicago before you go to Philadelphia?
For some odd reason, yeah. I'm taking the train tomorrow at 3 a.m., and I will be in Chicago very soon. And Esmeralda and I will actually be on GN all night, for better or worse, Friday into Saturday talking way too much about the RNC and the upcoming DNC, probably things that have nothing to do with politics that are interesting to people, regardless of how you are going to vote or not vote.
So you're taking Amtrak from Cleveland. Tim's laughing because he and I have ridden Amtrak together.
Every time I'm with Patty, it always comes back to trains.
You can have a lot of fun on the train and question laws across state lines. But I wish you a safe travels. Can we talk to you tomorrow night? Or are you?
Absolutely. I'll be in an Amtrak station, so I'll have nothing else to do but want to talk to you.
Okay. And so that's Friday night. You're going to be on with Esmeralda from 2 to 5 a.m. filling in for Matt Bubala, which means I can give you your cash for any drinks that you get for $25. We'll just assume. Do whatever you want with the change. But that's all I got right now for I'll try to figure out maybe I'll try to get some gift cards for you too for all the work you've done for me. For our show, for listeners. We've done the work for the listeners. You've been our eyes on the ground. Our boots. It's not really boots. It's
I'm wearing boots. I'm wearing boots. I'm an adult man. I wear nice shoes and they're boots.
They're boots on the ground. Well, get some rest. You've got a big day ahead of you tomorrow. It's the big speech from Donald Trump. It's funny because we just talked about Ted Cruz. You didn't even say anything about Governor Pence's speech.
I don't think it's going to dominate the news cycle. The only thing that people are going to remember is the lack of a kiss that almost happened.
What? Who almost kissed
him? At the end of the speech, Donald Trump went in to essentially kiss his forehead and or cheek.
Ew.
You know, like sometimes it's not that unnormal of a goodbye.
But they turned the wrong way.
Would have kind of left a shroud of Turin on his forehead too, wouldn't it have?
You're right. It's awkward when you go in for like you think you're going to kiss somebody or you think you're going to get kissed and then it doesn't happen and then there are millions of people watching. That's awkward.
Yeah, well, just handshake, man.
Just keep it simple or even a fist bump. It all works. Brandon, be well. And
I don't think Donald Trump should do a fist bump to anybody. Really. any white person in their 70s should not do a fist bump. Just shake hands. Shake hands and nod.
Yeah, I think that's appropriate. I think you're absolutely right when it comes to that. Well, thank you, Brandon, and we will talk to you tomorrow night.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. More after this on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. I'm joined by Brandon C. Price, who has a lot of events coming up. He's got the second anniversary of Vamp this weekend. Go to vampchicago.com to find out more about their amazing music, comedy, and drinking show. And you said you also had a Michael J. Fox event coming up as well?
It's the same thing. So we've been trying to officialize our partnership with the Michael J. Fox Foundation for a little while now. Parkinson's is something that a lot of us that run the show are affected by in our families, and I'm super excited to say that not only a lot of the proceeds from this weekend, but from here on out, the shows in general, part of the proceeds will always be going to donate to figure out research on Parkinson's. So it's pretty much the most fun thing you can do and still be a good person.
See, Tim and I are not about that. We're about possibly making you angry and irate. Come see our show. We've got
booze. Come see our show. Give me money. Buy my CDs.
Exactly.
Give me more money.
Buy my shirts.
Buy a full price
buy me
ticket.
Drinks.
Yes, exactly.
Those who are donating do not get discounts.
Altruism. Altruism doesn't belong. There's no altruism
in comedy.
It's
madness.
You guys
that you're
are blowing
about.
The cover off the plan.
Tim, you've got your show Campaign this Monday, July 25th. You do it every fourth Monday of the month.
Yes, it's a for-profit show. We give absolutely nothing to charity.
But it's a place where people can, comics can vent and audiences can sort of live, vicariously through them or precariously.
Yeah, actually, you know, something special has happened because there's comics from all over. There's all over the spectrum. We've got Clintonistas and burnouts and cruisers and trumpets all doing comedy. And the same people that would kill each other, there actually was two people there last month that on Facebook threatened to kill one or the other if they ever met in public.
Really?
And they hugged.
Oh, no.
They hugged after
Was it
the
anybody
show.
I know? Can you tell me which
Probably.
Oh, don't tell me who. Craig, I think we need to fire up the trumpets, by the way. If he's having trumpets at the show, we should certainly make sure. Maybe they'll want this intro music that Craig's going to unfold for you, because we enjoy playing it on the show. I know listeners like it because it makes them drive off the road if they happen to be behind the wheel of a vehicle. I have to say, Monday nights at Zany's have become really a great... Oh, here you go. Have you heard this?
Cowardice. Oh, yeah, this is gold.
Are you serious?
Apologies for freedom. Man, these kids are gonna I can throw handle up this. Ball. When freedom brings, answer the call. On your feet, stand up tall. Freedom's on our shoulders. USA!
Enemies of freedom. These are the little girls,
yes.
the little Trump girls.
Yeah, yeah, I think it was in St. Louis that they... Yeah.
I don't know what was more embarrassing, those little girls or Diamond and Silk.
What was Diamond and Silk?
Diamond and Silk, it was a couple of sisters.
Mm-hmm. They also did a similar...
See the quote? That
yes, sisters. Oh, were they doing
talking
like...
about? And they actually, I don't know if you remember the... there was a comedy team. Boy, I can't remember their name. But it's where one person just talks and the other one just does the reaction.
Penn and Teller?
No.
That's
no.
Magic.
No, it was the old. It was an old Chitlin Circuit comedy team. Zach and Mac.
I don't remember.
You remember Zach and Mac?
Zach and Mac?
Zach and Mac. The big guys. They had to be together. They had to weigh at least 1,000 pounds, easy.
Wow.
And one of them would get up there as like, oh man, we. I went home with an ugly woman last night. And then the person behind him would go, real ugly. Yeah, she was ugly. Oh, she's so ugly. And that was basically their shtick.
Okay.
Yeah, one person does the setup, and the other one just does reactions. And I guess it's an old African American. I mean, it has its roots in African American comedy, and that's what Diamond and Silk do.
It's the same thing for Trump or for
yeah, they actually came out for Trump.
Okay,
he brought it out and it was I'm for Trump. Yeah, we are. Yeah, you know,
are they the two women that are doing video blogging? Because I think that
I think so too. Yeah,
I did see them because they were talking about the shooting and they were going off. I mean, they were hard to stop watching.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Zach and Mac actually met an untimely end.
Oh no!
Is one of them died of a heart attack? Duh.
Mm-hmm.
And the one that died was the one that did the setups.
Uh-oh.
So it was like Gladys Knight going. Yeah. It was like Gladys Knight going and the Pips trying to find a gig.
May he rest in peace. Both of them. Physically and career-wise. So when you have the campaign, has there been any reaction from the audience? Because when you do a political comedy show these days, you know, audiences can be a little bit hesitant. But I think that people need this now.
Well, actually, the audience has been great. It's they come in, they know what they're said, they know what they're there to see, they know it's going to be a political show, they know it's going to be from all over the spectrum,
mm-hmm.
they know that everybody is guaranteed to be entertained and offended at least once in the evening.
Oh, there you go.
So it's even the audience has there's a little bit of meeting in the middle, and that's what I've discovered is that with comedy we can all find the middle to meet at.
You're creating conversation. I don't believe it.
Well, people have been talking about this, that comics are kind of the ones that are calling BS on things. That we're more likely than, you know, commentators. You know, if you do have a political leaning, let's say like Hal Sparks, who was on in the last hour, and you were tempted to call in and have a conversation as well.
Oh, did I want to have a conversation?
But whatever our perspective is, whatever whatever informs our opinions, I mean, we're going to, you know, we'll call it the way we see it, even if you may not agree with it, right?
Yeah.
What do you want to address? What part of Hal Sparks' conversation would you like to address?
I'll just make it quick. The president has absolutely no place in overturning Citizens United. There's nothing in the Constitution a president can do to write a constitutional amendment. Nothing.
Well, he can't. Or the president, or he or she can't do anything directly. But
appoint a judge.
That's
really all you can
do. To appoint a judge.
Well, no, a judge. You can't do it with a judge. Judge can't make a constitutional amendment either.
When the decisions. Well, I mean, how the Supreme Court upheld Citizens United was what they did ultimately, right?
Yeah, but they can't write legislation.
No, they obviously not. That's.
But then now that they've upheld it, you can't go, oh, you know, now that we got a couple new judges, let's revisit it.
That's
right?
A legislative branch.
It's a question.
Well, no, that's the last step is when you appoint a judge.
Well, usually, usually when a decision is made, it's like 50 to 100 years before the court revisits it.
Right, so it's sort of a lofty goal to think that you can change this within the next term of a president. Or
there's no way a president can do anything. And there was Hal going, that's going to be her first act is she's going to repeal Citizens United. It's like, wow, read the Constitution, Hal. It don't work like
now,
that.
Now I'm trying to figure out the executive. What are the repeal powers of the? Are there any repeal powers?
You
of the
can't
president?
Repeal a Supreme Court decision.
There you go.
It's the only way you can. The way it's set up now, the only thing you can do with a Supreme Court decision is a constitutional amendment.
We can't repeal a legislative amendment. an amendment to the Constitution. It can't be. I'm trying to put it all together. It's been a while.
Constitutional amendment is pretty much
locked in. It has to be amended by the.
That's the trump card. That's the ace of spades.
Well,
right,
prohibition.
There. Nothing beats that.
Yeah. Prohibition didn't take 50 years, and that was an amendment. I mean, that wasn't repealed by a president, but it was
repealed by another amendment.
Right. I'm saying so a president can't have an influence on
and that
its
was,
legislative
and that was
branch.
Just a bunch of drunks saying we're tired of getting arrested.
Right. But can there be a bunch of politicians who say we're against this? Can they be influenced by the executive branch?
Two-thirds the House, two-thirds the Senate, or two-thirds the state legislatures.
Right.
No role for a president whatsoever.
Well,
I mean,
except trying
to whip up the votes, and that's not even their job anyway.
No. There's
two-thirds all over the place. That's crazy.
Yeah, you'd have
think
to
about that.
Yeah, there's a House and Senate Cool Whip.
A lot would have to change.
I watched House of Cards. I am in this conversation.
I probably should watch that. A lot would have to change legislatively in the fall. Let's hang out more with our guests, Brandon C. Price and Tim Slagle, when we come back after this on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio, joined by comedian Tim Slagle, who's hosting Campaign at Zany's on Wells. That's in Old Town. Coming up on Monday, July 25th. How can people get some tickets to that show?
I didn't bring any, so.
So don't come here. That would be weird.
So go to Facebook. Find me on Facebook. Tim Slagle, S-L-A-G-L-E. Find me on Facebook. And friend me. And then send me a message and say you said you'd give me comps on WGN, and I'll give you comps. I'll give as many comps as people want. They give me like so many comps, mm-hmm. and I've been doing this 30 years. I have no friends that want to see me anymore.
So you need new friends. You need new friends. In fact, go be his friend, and then you can join in on some lively conversation when it comes to politics or social issues.
Oh yeah. I always like to dive in on Facebook.
If you haven't felt poked lately, you can feel poked. he gets everybody. Brandon C. Price joins us as well. His show Vamp, it runs every Friday and Saturday night. It's a music, comedy, and drinking show, and they've just developed a relationship with the Michael J. Fox Foundation. Much of the proceeds mm-hmm. from the shows go to for research for Parkinson's disease.
Absolutely. Team Fox, baby.
It's the only fan letter I've ever written in my entire life was to Michael J. Fox. Yes, when I was in high school.
Oh, wow. Big crush.
I had a big crush on him.
And what was that from? Was that from Dr. Hollywood?
It was from Back to the Future.
Back to the Future was the crush?
It started with Back to the Future when I was in grade school, and then I didn't like his character on Family Ties.
Because he was a Republican.
But he was a little strident. He was a little aggressive when it came to his politics. Was more of what I was always like. God, this guy's a little hard with the politics.
The biggest shock for me mm-hmm. was finding out that when he was in Family Ties, is that right?
Yes.
Is that the show? Was finding out that he was 32.
He was cast at 25 years old to play a 15-year-old.
Yeah.
And he'd been a sitcom star in Canada and had come here. And actually, I know all this stuff. Ask me anything.
Yeah, I know. It's like, wow.
He had been selling off his sectional couch when he got the call to play Alex P. Keaton. And he also was living on macaroni and cheese at the time.
Huh. I had a buddy that had like a bit part, I think, on Family Ties. And he said it's the weirdest thing to see this 15-year-old kid with a cigarette and a yeah. scotch after in between taping.
Exactly. Yeah, he was he's kind of a little guy. He always looked very youthful. And some guys who and women too who have
Hollywood
that,
likes the little people.
They do like the little. Well, yeah, look at Tom Cruise. I was going to say someone like Ralph Macchio. It's hard for him because he always looked like a teenager. So when he got to be 50, and Scott Baio too still kind of looks very youthful.
Do I have time for my Kevin Bacon story?
Yes, please.
Okay. I was living.
You're not a fan of Kevin Bacon's, are you?
What?
I remember you saying something about him when we were on the
Antrag tape. I might have told.
Oh, years ago, yes.
The Kevin Bacon story.
Go ahead.
And I'm living in Wicker Park, and two doors down, mm-hmm. they decide to film Stir of Echoes.
Such a good movie.
They take the house two doors down and they turn it into a set.
Right.
For you know, for me it's like whatever, you mm-hmm. know. But Mrs. Slagle was absolutely fascinated with the fact that there was a movie being done right there in the neighborhood. And then she found out Kevin Bacon was going to be in it, and she just loved Kevin Bacon at the time. So every free type moment she had, she was outside looking above the crowd, peeping around to see if she could get a glimpse of Kevin Bacon.
Right.
And she came in one day and she goes, I think it's going to be a comedy. I go, why? And she goes, well, they got this midget that looks exactly like Kevin Bacon.
Oh, dear. And I go, oh, dear.
Really? And I say, oh, I got to see this. And I went out there and it's like, I hate to break it to you, honey.
Wow. So you're saying he's just a little fella.
Yeah.
But how tall would you say?
5'3", 5'4"? I've been calling him Tiny Kevin Bacon ever since.
Well, you're taller. About how tall would you say he is?
5 foot.
No.
Really?
Craig, now, you've got to look up how tall Kevin Bacon is, because they're usually pretty honest on the sites. Maybe to you he seemed like he was 5 feet tall. Because I was surprised to find out. I met Robert Downey Jr. and he was 5'6", but I was wearing 5 inches.
Kevin Bacon is 5'10".
No.
That's what it says.
Well,
Bacon,
5'10".
Apparently Kevin goes into his Wikipedia site nightly and adds 10 inches.
How tall does it say Robert Downey Jr. is, just out of curiosity? I'm just curious, because it's got to be somewhere in between what Tim Slagle thinks and what the Wikipedia
Robert
thinks.
Robert Downey Jr., 5'9".
No.
That's what it says.
I knew he was wrong, but I'm right.
And how high did you say Robert Downey?
I would say he's 5'7" tops, because I was wearing five inch heels, and I felt really bad because I had to go down. Awkward. Yeah.
Huh.
It was uncomfortable.
Little tiny Iron Man.
I was like, why did I wear these shoes? This is very strange. He's adorable and very nice, but I would say 5'7". Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe with the shoes, he's 5'9".
Last update to Robert Downey Jr.'s height was just a year ago, just so you guys know. So he may have grown
year.
Recent update.
Hey,
those nuclear hearts have been known to give you a couple inches.
Well, and actually, it's around when they did the Iron Man versus Captain America stuff, because Chris Evans, apparently his height went down just a little bit,
right.
So they came closer together.
A little evened out. Well, when you're making that Sherlock money and the Avengers money, you can pay somebody to go in on that Wikipedia page.
You can afford implants.
Yeah, there's that too. There is that too. I don't. It is strange when your perception meets reality, and that's it's hard. But I don't think that Kevin Bacon is 5 feet tall. I find that. I would say that Michael J. Fox is probably 5'4". Why are we talking about height? Okay, it's because of Kevin Bacon.
Because it's the only thing I have over those people. They've got money. They've got careers.
You have height.
I've got about 12 inches on most of them.
You can go ahead and mark that for Nick DiGilio's show, please. We're just going to
nice.
Go ahead. Know what's happening anymore. What has been Tim, because you engage in these conversations online, so there is on social media the arguments that can erupt, and you mentioned that two people online that would threaten to hurt each other when they met, they hugged, right?
Yeah.
The rhetoric lately has been jarring, and I know it's not new. You know, we've said awful things to each other. People have, since we learned language, have figured out ways to insult each other, to hit below the belt. But this seems particularly harsh this year.
Well, there's two things going on. Number one is the fact that the electorate has never been more polarized.
Mm-hmm.
And I could get into that, why I think that is, but that kind of bores me.
Okay.
But what I think the other thing is that you've got a polarized electorate and Facebook. And there's a certain anonymity when you're on Facebook. You
right.
know that whatever you say to the person, he can't really do anything about it. And what it reminds me of is that when you're in your car, you do stuff that you won't do
yes.
when you're face to face with somebody. You see a merge sign, and some people will go all the way to the end of the merge sign.
As you should.
We can get into
it
that
helps,
too.
It helps with traffic. I'm just saying.
No, not if you pass people.
Well, those people, more people should be in the lane that leads up to where the cars. It should be a zipper effect.
A zipper doesn't work if one side is moving while the other side's stable.
But I'm saying more cars need to cooperate and take up the lane the way to the end. I'm sorry.
Not the point of the story, huh?
Yeah, no, not at all. I think I found the person that goes all the way to the merge sign.
Oh, yeah, you did.
Yeah,
I did.
You wouldn't go into a grocery store, would you?
And cut in front of somebody?
And go all the way to the front of the line and shove your shopping cart in there and say, hey, you people need to learn how to zipper.
This is a capitalistic society. It's every man for himself. Well, I'm the guy who drives 55 in a 70, though. That's me. So sorry about it.
No, I mean, the similarity would be, I don't even know what the similarity would be, because it's not, it's a lane that's empty. Traffic, there's actually, there's been studies on this.
The lane is empty. The lane is empty because people have gotten over.
Usually too soon. Right, it's the psychology of getting over too soon.
Here's the thing. If you're passing those people, if you're going faster than those people, you're essentially
You're being a jerk, yes. Yeah. And I feel
basically,
that way.
What you should do is when the traffic on the left, if it's merge left, when the traffic on the left stops, you should stop in the right as well.
Wow, you are very magnanimous when it comes to driving.
No, because when you do that, all of a sudden you'll notice that the people on the left start moving. And then you can start moving. And then you start moving at the same speed. And then you merge.
There, I've noticed this, but Craig, where are you? Are you all the way to the end of the lane to where the merge is?
I don't know.
Don't be afraid.
No, I don't think so.
The reason I noticed is I wasn't going to Great America, but I needed to get off at that exit, and everybody was already getting over way too soon, blocking up traffic. And I was like, okay, well, I'm just going to go to the other, like the farther exit, the next one. So that, you know, you go whether it's east or west or whatever it is for Great America, and then loop around and then come down that same road. And I was moving faster than, you know. It's just I was circumventing it. But if you went past all those people, you could see that they all had moved over far too soon. And there was an entire lane that was also the lane to exit. Like they had all moved over in anticipation of exiting, leaving an entire lane of also exit, which was completely baffling to me. So that's why I have started using that other lane. Everyone can use it. You've all moved over way too soon.
Right, but if you're passing people... If you're passing people, you're...
It's not my fault that they didn't get over. I am passing people.
No, it is. But you shouldn't be. Because then what you're doing is you're forcing them to stop. Because then they have to stop when you decide you want to get in at the end. However, if you actually move at the exact same speed as the people who got over too soon, then you can merge rather than jam your car in right at the end.
I seem to get in just fine. Is Craig?
No, I mean, you know, to Patty's point, when there are actually two exit lanes, though, this is a different conversation. When you can actually get off on a different area that they're moving over too soon because they're idiots and they don't realize they can get out another way.
Yes, Brandon?
I'm completely agreeing. To follow up Craig's point, I just, like, in my car right now, I wouldn't. When I drove a Dodge 5.9, yes, I made my own rules a little bit more. Because you're not it's covered in dents. What are you going to do?
I don't think it's making your own rules. I think if there are two lanes, right? It says this is something that I'm sure we could go on and on about.
I don't know. We should talk about this forever.
I don't think we should.
And maybe there are two exit lanes when I go in and I pass all the people, and then there's only one, and then I thought there were two.
Yeah. to me, when you use the grocery store comparison, it's more like everyone has gotten into the lane where there is no cashier and no self-checkout. That's like, why are we all in this lane and there's no cashier here?
Or when everybody gets into the 15 items or less lane because they all have those items and there's a guy wide open that is a regular lane. And you can just go over there and I can get out.
Yeah,
right,
because
away.
You've all mentally thought, well, I have less than 15,
right,
or this will be faster.
Yeah.
Or the dude with 34 items in that line. You should be able to merge ahead of him.
Okay, what was your point about the traffic?
Oh, no, I already made it.
Kevin Bacon was short.
I just said that people in a grocery store would not do that. They would not go to the end of the line and say, well, there's another lane here. Obviously, they're not using all the available space in the grocery store. It's not my fault they got in line early.
I think it's when you're honking at somebody, because we consider our car to be our bubble, and we're honking at somebody. If someone's not going fast enough, right, that's the one where people are endangering everybody when they tailgate and when they are flashing their brights because the person in front of them isn't going the speed that they think is appropriate. And it would be the same as being in line. And this is I heard a comic, and I can't remember if it was Pat Dixon. It was somebody, you would be like standing in line behind somebody. Come on, let's go. If you wouldn't do that in a grocery store,
right?
It would be that kind of a thing. But the thing about the merge line is not the same thing. More after this on 720 WGN. Wake me up before you go, don't leave me hanging on like a yo-yo. Wake me up before you go, I don't wanna miss it when you hit that high. Wake me up before you go. Go. you're listening pretty late, I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. I'm joined by Tim Slagle. He's hosting camp. Are you hosting and headlining, or host?
No, I'm just hosting, and I just do the current events of the day. Open the show, mm-hmm. and then I bring everybody up and let them rebut, take turns rebutting.
Have you been going to all the snapshots? Is that because that's been? I've done two of those, and those have been fun as well.
Yeah, Kevin and I kind of have a thing. As I do his snapshots, he does my campaign.
All right, I don't know that I would.
And
do
it's a, he's a good drinking buddy.
That's always good to have.
We're really making this wake-up call, right?
Yeah, we're doing this wake-up call. Right. And Brandon C. Price is also here. He's celebrating the second-year anniversary of VAMP. Go to vampchicago.com, and the venue is MCL.
Yeah, we're also a polka stop, so, you know.
Do you have a polka gym?
We don't have a gym. I have applied.
Oh, I want to poke a gym.
But we have a stop, so pick up a couple of great balls and enjoy a good time for a good cause.
Esmeralda, Craig is very nervous. Because we are calling... Oh, we are calling John Cass again.
I haven't been here for that, so.
Oh. He said, are you the little girl that calls me in the middle of the night?
He's the one that hates cats.
He does? He does hate
Remember
cats.
Remember that whole thing, Steve Dale?
Yeah.
I got mad about that.
Yeah, he does not like cats.
Cats are terrible, Esmeralda.
They're not.
Hello?
Oh, John Cass, Patty Vasquez. How are you doing, sir? He's going to hang up again.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. I thought you were going to hang up. Did we wake you up?
I just got up.
You just
got up? I've got to work, though. What time is it?
It is, oh boy, it's 5 minutes to two. I don't think you were going to work right now, were you?
No, not really.
We wanted to check in with you. We were hoping to just leave you a voicemail. You're one of the few people that leaves your phone on ringer. Are you expecting an emergency in the middle of the night? Because I really do apologize.
No, I don't know why I did it.
This is the third. I mean,
we shouldn't have.
Craig was very nervous to place this phone call.
I was nervous to place this call.
It was. I did have the. I believe I had the blessing of the station. It was. It's been great hearing.
Nervous?
Craig, the producer. Producer Craig. I was nervous.
Oh, Craig. Yes, I'll see you soon.
That's what I was nervous about. Okay.
My name is Hal Sparks. I thought it was a good idea to wake you up.
What time do you go to sleep, Craig? Or remind me to call you.
It won't happen when you're asleep.
Okay, that's even worse.
When you're awake.
You'll be
walking somewhere near the billy goat.
Wow. I'll be so close to the billy goat, too. That's so mean.
Right? No, it's okay, guys. What's going on?
How has been your experience at the convention?
How's my experience been?
Yeah, I mean, as an observer, as a writer, this has to be, I mean, this has got to be go time for you.
Yeah, it is. It's a great experience.
It's a great experience. But what's your take? I mean,
my experience is so, I don't know, experiential.
Would you compare it to the way you feel when we wake you up at about 2 o'clock in the morning? Is it quite as good or is it not as good?
Which one is this, though?
This is Craig again, the guy you're going to kill. Near
outside the
billy goat.
I'm not going to kill you, Craig.
Okay.
I would not kill you.
That's nice of you.
No, this is going to take longer. Okay.
No.
Thank you so much, everyone.
You're welcome.
You're so welcome.
I just wanted to get some of your insight on the convention, but I think he has to go. Yeah.
I think I have to. The longer I stay awake, then I
go to sleep. Go to sleep.
You know this, Patty.
I feel like I should sing to you, "Rock-a-bye, Baby."
No, I'm cool. All right.
Bye, John Cass. I don't know why he keeps answering his phone when we call.
Yeah, what a jerk.
What's your experience been like? How is that a bad question?
By the way, this was totally your idea, and I'm going to get murdered now.
Hey, no. You're clearly going to live through torture. You're not going to get murdered.
That's nice.
Don't go wide with it, Craig.
Did Stephanie not laugh and say that's great when we said we were going to call John Cass tonight?
I don't know who else I want to get murdered. I'm not getting anyone else killed by John. I'm going down alone.
We do this every night. Who else are we? We can call other people. We can call Representative Cabello if you want to call.
We still have like a minute and a half of commercials.
We do. Let me do a commercial and see if we have enough time to call Representative Cabello.
Okay.
What did you want to say?
I was going to say, I think John probably has. He's going to tell people, you know, I keep having this reoccurring nightmare that I'm awakened by a morning zoo.
I was asking what your experience has been like.
No, it wasn't so bad. I mean, we did just wake him up, so.
It's been experiential.
Cabello doesn't get murdery, right?
No, not at all. Although he's in law enforcement. More after this on 720 WGN.